Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to yet another program in the award-winning series of Listen to Older Voices. Everyone has a story, of that there's no doubt, and from time to time it's my good fortune to speak to someone who has a fantastic story and can tell it really well. 88-year-old Kate Kennedy is such a person. Born into a loving family in 1925, Kate quickly discovers that as much as she was loved, her mother doted on her brothers, and she just had to fit in. Although she never lacked for anything, it was the time of the Great Depression and things were tough. The family lost their home and her father, a musician, lost his job. And so Kate takes us on a journey through those Depression years and then through World War II, including telling us about the job she had in the munitions factory. Entertaining, informative and reflective. These are three words that'll come to mean a lot to you as you listen to Kate talking to me in her home. So, without much more ado, here I am talking with Kate Kennedy. Kate, thank you very much for coming onto the program. And may I ask you a question, and that is, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
Right, I was born at a hospital in Fitzroy on the 16th of January 1925. And I must say, I hate saying 1925 because everyone knows now that I'm 88.
Well, I can assure anyone and everyone who's listening, you may be 88, but you've got a spark of a lot younger woman than that in your eyes.
Oh, I'd really love to hear that.
No, but it's true. Kate, what are your earliest memories?
I don't remember any of that. My family were living in Brunswick at the time, and my father was a musician, and he was earning nice money. He was in control of the band in the city and earned nice money.
Right.
And so they decided it was time that they moved across the river and they bought a house in Narrawong Road.
Right.
Now, my earliest memories are naturally there because I was only two when they moved over to Caulfield. But I had three older brothers and they were lovely. I loved them to bits. They never spoilt me, but they, you know, would confide in me. And some of what I considered at that time the terrible things they did, because they stole fruit, you know, from the neighbours' trees, right. And that was terrible in those days. But I never told on them. I let their secrets were safe with me. But they were really lovely. Then I would say my earliest memories then were in there. And I can remember so clearly, we had one of those great big travel rugs. Do you know the old dark ones that had a little fringe either end?
Yes.
And my mother used to spread that out on the back lawn, and that was my world for playing. That was my complete world. I was quite happy she could leave me there, and I was, you know, probably by that stage about three. Now, then the big thing came along that they were going to build a new state school, which became Caulfield South 43-15, and our back fence was the common side fence of the school, and I can remember standing up on that fence and watching that school being built. So that was a wonderful thing, because my brothers were not able to go to that school. I think two of them caught up with my eldest brother. They had to go to Caulfield in Glen Huntly Road, which was quite a hike, but eventually the school was available to us. I can remember too that my brothers, we were Church of England, and my brothers went to St Agnes Glen Huntly to all of their social things and boys' clubs. But I was considered too young, so I was sent to the Methodists across the road. And my brothers really teased me unmercifully because, you know, Jesus wanted me for a sunbeam, and you know, they were horrible. Yeah, I really had a bad time over there. But still, they were lovely people. Now, you might like this. We had, in those days, all the tradespeople came with their various carts and, the baker, the rabbit man, the fish man. Now, the fish man leaves an indelible thing on my mind, and I've told a lot of people because I really think it's funny. Mum would go out and select the fish, and then he would fillet them on the spot, so that, you know, just ready for the pan. And I would stand and watch this whole operation, not yet of school age, about four. And he would cut the tails off, cut the heads off, and say, now you go and plant them in the garden, and a fish will grow at the end of the head, and from the tail the head will come. And I dutifully went and planted them and watered them, and could never understand why I was such a bad gardener.
Oh, yeah,
I really believed it.
I think that's wonderful. You mentioned your mum a little earlier. What sort of woman was your mum?
Mum was... I was never as close to my mother because she was one of eight children and there was only one brother. So she was surrounded by all these sisters. And my great-grandmother, I must tell you about my great-grandparents, who came out with one of the Henty brothers from England.
Oh, right.
And they were farming in Portland. So my grandfather learnt that, you know, all the ins and outs of market gardening. And they later bought a place in Box Hill, where later the Holeproof factory.
Oh, right. Grew.
Unfortunately, grandfather got gold fever and he sold up and went to the gold field, so because he lost so much. So in the end, Grandma ran a boarding house to keep her family going, but she was very good to my grandmother, apparently. And Mum was the nuisance of the family, and Grandma used to say, send her to me, and my grandmother would say, I can look after the rest if you take her.
Oh, troublemaker, Kate.
But for all that, she loved the boys. And by the time I came, my eldest brother was 11 years older than me. And then, you know, there was two more boys. The one closest to me was about 2.5 years older than me. And Mum used to say, and I could hear her say, of course I'm a boy mother. And I used to think, I felt like a bit of an orphan, you know.
Oh,
so the house was already set into the way of the boys. And I had to fit in with that, which, you know, I didn't know any different, really.
Until later on I heard her
say that she was a boy mother. That used to hurt then, but when I was little I didn't realise why. But it was good because I used to go with the boys to their cricket matches, and so I'm an avid cricket follower to this day. I was by the time I'd reached, you know, my teens, I was allowed to score for the local cricket team, so that was great.
That was,
you know,
pretty advanced for
them. Yes, it was lovely.
Yes, really. What about Dad? Did you have a relationship with him?
With my dad? Well, this is it. See, he was with the Palais Royal, and he was the band leader there. So, you know, he would work at night, and we'd be at school, and we didn't see a lot of Dad during that early time, particularly over there, until the Depression hit.
Right.
And then there was no money for live artists in those days.
Oh, no.
So everything fell to pieces. So we fell into pretty hard times then.
Along with a lot of people.
They lost the house, actually.
They did lose the house.
Yes, yeah.
Gosh.
So, you know, I do not exactly sympathise with a lot of people because, you know, we led a rather frugal life, really. And yet I think that a lot of them today who are losing their homes have gone over their heads, you know.
Yes.
But it's still a horrible thing when your dreams fall apart. So I had to leave that wonderful school. The boys, just Brother Lance and I, had to go to Ripon Lee School then. We moved around to a little house in Caulfield. We were able to walk there for a little while, but eventually we moved over to Elstonwick and from there finished our schooling at Ripon Lee. Broken-hearted about leaving Caulfield South, having watched it from the ground
up.
But my brother solved that mystery because he wagged most of the time.
I'll
never forget one embarrassing moment. But I, you know, I'm a very conscientious scholar, you know, and I was in the end, I caught up to him, so I was only one grade behind him. And one day the teacher in year eight came in and said, "Where's your brother?" And of course, when I left home for school, so did he. I didn't know where he was. But we had a funny episode then because I telling my mum, "I don't know what to do. It's very embarrassing because everyone in my class knew that my brother had wagged it." Mm. It was not something you really wanted to tell. And we sort of came to grips with that because we had a dog called Spotty. He was a fox terrier who I think had been turned out because people couldn't afford to feed him.
Of course.
And we didn't have much money, but a dog was very welcome in our family. And Spotty was wonderful. He used to play with the boys, and except one day Lance wagged it, and he was silly because we had a big cypress hedge in this house we were living in. So he took his school bag off and threw it behind the hedge, and Spotty went in and got it and presented it to Mum.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Kate Kennedy.
You mentioned school. You obviously enjoyed going to school.
Yes, I did, really. I loved learning, and it was really good because I was rather... I think the only time it became difficult for me was after I got up to, say, year 11 and 12, because doing year 12, I was only 14.
That was very young.
Yes, it was too young.
Yes.
Because I don't mean academically, but I was...
Social side?
Yes. And in those days, 2 years... You know, 14 amongst 16 and 17 was a really big big break. And so I finished up going to business college, although we had a very interesting time turning back the clock to our days in Brunswick. There was a lady who used to walk past our house, she was always running. My middle brother, Ron, always called her the lady that runs, and he would always wave to her or speak to her. One day my father was there and spoke to her, and she was running off to work, probably cleaning offices or doing something very menial, I'm sure. And so Dad said, "Well, you know, Mum had the four children, would she like to come and do some ironing and help Mum out?" Mm-hmm. She was delighted to do that and to get into the house. So she did that, and for a period she just didn't arrive. And Dad said, "I'm getting a bit worried about Miss Ayres. I don't know what's happened to her." He said to Mum, "I've got a horrible feeling something's wrong." So he went to where she was living and found her in the most appalling conditions and in a state of bordering on pneumonia.
Oh, gosh.
So he said, "Yeah, I can't leave you here. Would you, you know, like to come and move in and live with us? You can help my wife. She's expecting another baby." That was me. So she was only too glad to come. She really was wonderful. And particularly because Mum, even then, was so hooked on the boys, she said, "You take the baby, I'll look after the boys." So she virtually handed me over. So I think that was what I say, I didn't bond so closely with Mum.
Absolutely.
Because,
circumstances.
Yeah, but I didn't miss out on anything because she was just wonderful to me. And from that point on, she lived until the family needed her, mm-hmm. and she left us. But I spent all my school holidays with them at a boarding house for gentle people. You didn't get there if you were riffraff. You had to be someone. Okay. It was just a wonderful experience all my childhood then. I was taken down to Mentone the day after Christmas Day, Boxing Day. I had Christmas with the family, and then the rest of the school holidays would be spent down there. And they were wonderful ladies. One was, I better not mention her name. She'd know. But she was wonderful. She was headmistress of University High School, girls' school. And the other one was retired, and she had the property, owned the property, a family property, and ran the boarding house. So I had all of this, and, everything was beautifully done.
Of course.
Every night we sat down to the white damask cloths, the meat was carved at table, and all of those wonderful things, which
almost ceremonial. It was really. Yes.
And at the end of the meal, because we were living, very sparsely, really. When I think about it, scrambled eggs for us at home would be four eggs and a bit of water put in it and spread amongst six people.
That's right.
But we didn't think anything of it. But down there, there was ample. and they had their ducks and their chooks, so there were, you know, plenty of everything. Yes. And at the end of the meal, the fruit bowl would be passed around the table to finish a meal with a piece of fruit. And I'd look at it and think, what can I have? And I always absolutely love passion fruit, because I would finish up having a passion fruit and think, why didn't God make them as big as oranges? That was the big mistake he made.
Okay. That's a wonderful story. I assume there would have been, even if they were gentle people, as you put it, there still would have been some characters.
Oh, they were just wonderful. And to me, they were marvellous, because they taught me to sew, they taught me to knit, they taught me to crochet.
Goodness.
By the time I was 8, I could read a knitting book, you know, which I could never have done at home.
No.
And so, no, I was really, really fortunate that I had that.
Yes.
That time. I taught me to read. I was able to look at all the, you know, have access to all their books. And it was wonderful, and they encouraged me, you know, no end. It was just a wonderful experience, really. I look on it now, I would not have had anything like that.
That's right. You mentioned that around 14 you were doing year 11, 12.
Mm.
That would have been around about 1938 as well, wouldn't it? 1938, 1939, you were born in 25.
No, a bit earlier than that.
A bit earlier.
I started school, I was 5 in the January.
Right.
But I skipped.
You skipped classes.
Yes.
Where I was going is the fact that it was leading into the war years in Australia.
Yes, yeah.
Were you aware of this, and did it have any sort of impact upon you?
Oh, it did, because my two older brothers, one was in the Naval Reserve and one was in the militia.
Right.
And they were both dedicated to their choice. You know, they really, really loved it. And both of them, because they were in reserve, they were called up actually before declaration of war.
Right.
I don't know whether a lot of people ever mention that, but they were away at their various bases when war was declared. And I can remember now the night that it was declared and we heard it on the radio. And, of course, in those days we had the Herald boys.
On the street corners.
Yeah, Herald, right. Running around the streets. And, of course, Mum said to me, go and find the Herald boy and buy the paper. And I can remember that night vividly, going out and getting a Herald from the boy and bringing it back. And we knew then that, you know, the boys would be away.
Yes.
So the brother who was in the Navy, he was right. The older brother went into camp, and then he was sent down to Queenscliff because they were guarding the heads in
that's right, in that fort. Yes.
And he was there for something like 15 months before they moved them on, and they went through their medical examination, and they found, which we knew, but it apparently didn't happen when they joined up, that he'd had a heart problem from when he was quite a small child.
Oh, right.
So they invalided him out of the army, which absolutely broke his heart, because he was a born soldier.
Right.
He was then sent to the munition factory, and 15 months later he was killed in an explosion there.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives.
Because I thought, you know, these days he could have been given a desk job in St Kilda Road, anywhere. But, you know, that was not to be. Yeah.
Oh, how
sad. So that was the first break in our family link. And when I look now, he lived at home with us. During that time he worked at Footscray, and he boarded with a lovely lady there. And he had a push bike, and we were still in Narrowong Road at that stage. And he used to, every Sunday night, the bike would come out on the table, a push bike, and he'd make sure that everything was running, because he used to bike from Caulfield to Footscray to work every day.
That is for people who don't know Melbourne, that's quite a ride.
That's a ride,
that's
every day
ride.
And home again.
That's right.
And I used to hate Sunday night, because everything would be all over the kitchen table.
Oh, the
you know,
bike.
We had a great big kitchen table for 6 people on it, or all the bike pieces would be there, but he knew what he was doing, and it went. Eventually that really caught up with him, and he got to board with this lovely lady out at Footscray, and he would just come home at the weekend.
A little earlier, you mentioned the radio. That was a very important feature in life.
Oh, it was. Yeah. It was wonderful. But what I did not mention to you, that we really fell on hard times, and Mum and Dad couldn't pay it. So we were without gas or electricity for quite a long time. And I could.
Was this during the Depression years?
During the Depression years. And homework would be done with, you know, by kerosene lantern on the kitchen table. And it was quite unbelievable. But this one brother who I'm telling you about, when we had next door neighbours, the Biles family, and he ran an engineering business, so he said he could see that my brother, eldest brother, had, you know, something there that he could tap into for his business, and he apprenticed him. But once the war came,
they stopped it all.
Yeah, the apprentice papers were worth nothing. No. The benches were just thrown out the window. No fault of his, of course, or, you know, it didn't alter the fee. So that was, it didn't really matter after a while, because he went into the army, and
exactly,
it was a very short life. He was only 25.
Oh, that's he's just a boy.
Yeah.
Really.
When you look at them now and think.
Well, yes, indeed.
Yeah, that was a very hard time and a growing, you know, a growing up thing.
But it was growing up for both people in the country, wasn't it, the nation, because most people suffered during that period.
They did. Our next door neighbour, they were in much the same state as ourselves. They had two boys who went into the army, and on the other side they had two boys. So all of the boys in those three houses were
gone.
And one on our right side, they came from the country, and the country people were still able to grow. And every now and again, this wonderful box of vegetables and fruit would come down to the station, but there was always some passed over the fence to us. They always shared it.
I've heard that story so often, how in times when it was so tough, people still found that compassion.
I'll tell you another thing that really, really intrigued me when I look back on it. My mother, and it was always Mrs. Jensen and Mrs. Colson, they never, ever called each other by their Christian name.
Isn't that strange?
Our boys did.
Yes.
They called her Zoe, and I don't know whether she felt clipping them over the ears for being familiar or not.
That's very strange, when you think back.
But, they were wonderful neighbours. On the other side, they were an English family that came out, the mother, the father, the Lambton family. And they came out with mother, father and auntie. And that was very sad. Dick, the eldest son, was called up, and Laurie, in his turn, lovely boy too, joined up, and he asked if he could go in the same, I don't even know what it was, but they were on one of the ships going over in the Pacific, and the ship was torpedoed and both the boys were killed.
In fact, I was surprised they let them do that, because I thought they had a policy of trying to keep families split up for that very reason.
They probably didn't.
Yes.
Anyway,
that was sad.
And
very sad.
Later on, Auntie died during the war, and the husband did. And so there's this poor woman, her whole family had
gone. Gone like that.
Yes. So that was the story. I'm sure many, many people had.
Repeated all over the place, yes. When the war ended, was that a joyous moment for you, or was it just, okay, now I can get back to my life?
Well, no, it was a joyous moment to know that the war was over, but you didn't get back to a normal life. It took a long, long time. You know, we were still rationed with our tea and our butter and our sugar. I remember when rationing came off, I made a cake with half a pound of butter in it, and I don't think it was any better than, you know, although we decided we didn't want to make cakes with the horrible margarine that was around in those days. It was really awful. But, no, it took a long time for things to get back to normal, you know. One of the things that worries me now about our state today is that during the war, we could not get shipment of anything from overseas, and we were virtually isolated from Europe and England and America. You know, there was nothing could come in here. And Australia was able to make everything they needed. You know, one of the things that really got to me was the power drill. Everything we made because we couldn't get it from overseas.
That's right.
And then bit by bit it's gone.
Yes. Yes, and the manufacturing industry
that
just
has
collapsed, hasn't it?
And we could do it. We did it for 6 years.
Yes. It's very strange that a nation as young as Australia was able to do that in many ways, but it just showed how innovative and creative we could be.
Of course.
And what is strange now is that we gave all that up so easily.
So easily.
Mm.
All for the dollar, really.
Yes, that's right. Short-term.
And yet there'd have been a lot more dollars had we kept it.
Supposedly wiser people than you and I made those decisions, but when you look back now, you go, I don't think that was very wise.
No, it wasn't wise.
No, not at all.
Because we lost our young apprentices through that.
Yes.
And it was never a good idea to cut technical schools out.
No, well...
You know, never was, because we weren't training them, but of course now there's no jobs for them anyway.
That's right, because we're not producing, we're just consuming now, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing when war finished? What job were you in?
Well, this was rather strange, because... After I knew you were coming, even over this weekend, I said to Claire, I don't think you knew how I finished up doing what I did. And she said, no, I don't. And I said, well, I was going to join the army. And I had all my papers signed. I'd given notice at work. They gave me a farewell party.
Mm.
And then my father said, I don't know how you can do this to me. We've got 3 sons gone away.
Oh, dear.
And here you are going to leave us.
Play the emotional card.
Everything was in... It set in motion to do that. In the end, he got to me, and I couldn't. But so then you became one of the members of society that Manpower said, well, you know, well, what happens now? So they put me into Department of Munitions, but because I'd been with an engineering company, I worked with an old English firm, Ruston and Hornsby, they put me into the munition department in hand tools and gauges.
Right.
So that's how I got there.
Join Kate and I next week as we learn about her lifelong career in publishing, meeting Ron Kennedy, and starting a family, as well as her sharing of her philosophies on life. All this and more next week on Listen to Older Voices with Kate Kennedy. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program, and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.